everyone. You're listening to episode 11 of Gossip That's Good For You,
a podcast where we use pop culture and celebrity gossip as an entry point for deeper conversations about life.
I'm Molly Smith, a TV and film costumer living in New York City.
And I'm Denise Coftesi, a journalist and documentary producer living in Los Angeles.
This week, we're gossiping about how our Christmas holidays went, The Matrix and Keanu Reeves, how one of us got bruised playing virtual reality, Emily in Paris is back on Netflix, the Kennedy Center Honors, newly released Netflix film, Don't Look Up, Being the Ricardos movie review, and in our segment, What Do You Think? An episode of And Just Like That had us asking, how do we know if we're making the right or wrong choices in life when it comes to the big decisions?
Hey, Molly, how was your Christmas week?
My Christmas week.
Oh, yes. I can already that was the reaction I was waiting for.
It was a bit dramatic. Okay. How do I say this delicately? Wow. Okay. I'll start out with my Christmas Eve. Super wonderful. We took COVID tests as my family requested. We went to my dad's cousin's house. They have two twin boys who are 10 years old. And it was just us and their mother, my Aunt Sunako. And we had such a nice time. The best part was my son, who is 1.5, playing with the 10-year-old boys. They were amazing with him. Amazing. For like 4 hours straight, they just played and laughed. And my heart was like so big. It was amazing. And we had just really nice, quiet dinner. Went home, peaceful, lovely, 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 lovely. So, okay, I can't get into it too much, but we had conflict with my stepdaughters.
Ooh.
So
I feel like Christmas, I feel like holidays are the illusion that like they're supposed to be happy and cheery and families get along is fake, because I feel like family drama and that stuff is more the norm, you know, like it's kind of, if people who say that their like holidays are perfect and everything went well, I'm like, you're lying or your family is zombies.
Yeah. Like, you know how Gwyneth Paltrow like shows off how she gets along so well with her ex and they're like this one big happy family together and
yeah, liar.
I mean, whatever the...
Yeah, there's just, I'm sorry, no way. Let me talk to your, like, let me sit in on your kids' therapy sessions. Like, what is Chris Martin saying about you behind your back? Because he's pretty quiet. Like, I don't buy it.
He's pretty quiet. Yeah, it's not simple. It's just not that simple. And like, if there are families, and I know there are families that really get along wonderfully and everybody's this one big happy family, and that's amazing. And that's great. But we struggle a little more, but the girls did not want to do what we had planned to do for Christmas.
Oh, that's hard. When you said like most families, like, you know, like families that get along, whatever, do you know any families like that? And especially with divorce, I feel like you can get along. There's like an uncomfortability maybe.
Yeah, there's often an uncomfortability. Like my ex-husband, his parents were split and they grew up together and their families grew up together. So they did spend a lot of the holidays together in a sense, but they did it, I think, just to make everyone happy, for them to still enjoy themselves. And it was peaceful, yeah. But the uncomfortability thing absolutely existed. It wasn't like they were buddies and like joking around and like loving each other's company, you know?
And it's also like the way people act on the outside and then how are they really feeling? Right. Like you could put up on a show to be like, well, I want to put on the facade for my family and for like, if you, when you have kids, like for the kids that everything's fine, that I feel fine, it's great. But then like when internally the emotions that people probably are feeling and dealing with, especially during the holidays with the family, when you have to bring families together and stuff, that's different.
It's got to be hard.
Yeah.
It is hard. It's got to be hard. I know it's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. It's just not that simple. And like my parents moved away now. So my parents aren't like in the neighborhood anymore. So, you know, I want to see my family for Christmas. It just was a really heartbreaking situation to the point where I actually had a breakdown. Like I had a complete meltdown, hysterically crying about the whole thing, not specifically because of this reason, for a number of things that occurred within this entire conversation. And aside from all that, we went up to my parents where they're living now. My sister, my nephew, her husband were all here. So the two boys got to play and nothing could make me happier. I was with my family, so it was lovely. How about you? Tell me about you.
I mean, I had a lovely Christmas, but I mean, it's hard, especially like living in California, traveling. So I flew on my birthday on the 22nd. I mean, it was really great. It's so brief. Like, it's so quick. The time goes so quickly. And also, like, my parents came in from Turkey with the new COVID, with like this Omicron and all of that, like anxiety, like it really like does put like a cloud over how stressed you're feeling. And also like the holidays are just so chaotic and hectic. Like, you know, they go by so quickly, and being in a house full of people, and then it's like, oh God, like it's over in a minute. And I feel like a stress is probably most on mothers, and, you know, I'm sure fathers too, but like,
yeah,
needing to make sure your kids are having the best time, and like you wanting to have those. I think like there's so much pressure put on like making sure this is the best, like we are having a happy time, like we are doing all the things. And it's like nobody can live up to that standard, you know, and there's so much to pack in. So, and I think that that's really hard. And like, I feel like I was barely home. I like came back so quickly, and like,
yeah,
you know, and Christmas was really, it was nice, and then it's just over.
I know, the buildup, and then it's just...
And it's like, did I even get to talk to anybody? I'm like, not really, like, because it was Christmas, so you don't get a moment, really. But it was nice. I mean, I accomplished so many things. I've never seen The Matrix. Have you?
I have.
It was one of those movies that, like, I thought I'd seen, and, like, people reference it, and I thought I got it. But then my sister's boyfriend wanted to watch the new one. And I was like, you know, okay, like I'll watch the new one, but I think I know the story. And he was like, no, we're going to start from the beginning. We're going to watch them all.
Yeah, smart.
I told my friend Paul, I was like, oh my God, I have to watch The Matrix. And he was like, why did you tell them you'd never seen it? You idiot. I was like, damn it. But I'm actually so happy I got to watch it. I'm like, oh, I get it. Like I thought I knew what it was about, but I had no idea. And it makes more sense.
Yeah.
But then I could not go to 2 and 3. I was like, okay, I need a break.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to watch them all back to back.
No, I don't know how people do that. Like, I don't know. Ugh.
And Keanu Reeves is so Keanu Reeves. Like, he is just him in every movie. It's so...
Yeah. I know what you mean.
It's comforting. I'm like, oh, Keanu, here you are again, just being Keanu.
Yeah, I know. He's an interesting guy.
Remember, like, we were on a rooftop or something. Like, this was, like, years ago. And I forget, but, like, someone we were with was like, oh, like, Keanu Reeves. Like, I've never heard of him in a relationship. Maybe he's gay. And you were like, no. And you were like, Keanu Reeves, like, told the story about his girlfriend who I didn't know, like, she died in the car with him or something.
I told you this story?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, you did.
What, in college?
No, it was like we were in New York and you were like, no, it's a really tragic. Like he had a wife or he had a pregnant girlfriend and she died. Oh, you're not even, listen, you knew it at the time. Or I'm making this all up and I had a dream that this happened.
Okay. The only reason that I'm thinking I knew this story is if it's even true, I'm like trying to look really quickly. Right,
I know,
now.
Google it quick because I'm like, did I just make up a false rumor about Keanu Reeves and his not dead girlfriend? Oh God.
Okay, Keanu Reeves met director David Lynch's assistant, Jennifer Sim, at a party. She gave birth 8 months into her pregnancy, who was a stillborn. Oh my God.
Oh.
They broke up several weeks later, but reconciled. And then, oh my God, on April 2nd, 2001, she was killed in a car crash with 3 other cars in LA. Chills just went through my entire body.
I can't believe you definitely knew this before.
So the reason I think I knew this is that if it was when you were in New York, this is when my dad's old business partner, they used to see Keanu Reeves at work a lot. And she was like really into him. And I think my dad and her would like joke around that like she would date him, like, because they would see him in the elevator. So she probably told me that story because she was talking about him all the time.
Ugh.
But clearly, I have 1,000% forgotten about that story.
It's all I think about whenever I see him. And like, I'm like, what a good, like, he just seems like such a good guy. I had a boyfriend in college who I think like I just hated The Matrix on principle because I dated this guy in college who was like obsessed with The Matrix.
Oh, okay.
Like one of those. And like, oh God, would reference it all the time and like made me go see. I saw Matrix 3 or something in the movie theater and I was like, this is so dorky. And I was just so embarrassed. Like, why am I this loser?
Yeah.
But it is so dorky, but it's just because dorks ruin things doesn't mean that you can't like them.
Yeah, you can find your own way to enjoy something like The Matrix. Absolutely. Now, what is this? I thought this was only like the second Matrix. I know I've seen it. I know I've seen The Matrix, but what number is this?
This is like, so I think it's like technically the fourth one, but it's 20 years later or something. Okay. It's like, okay. I didn't even watch it. Like, I didn't get to watch the new one, but I only saw the first one. And honestly, I'm never going to sit down and watch it by myself. Like, could not care that much, but
yeah,
one day okay. I will. And I'll like it.
Yeah. No, I'm going to rewatch it. I don't know when, but I will rewatch it before watching the new one.
Also on Christmas, my niece and nephew got a VR headset mm-hmm. for Christmas. Mm-hmm. First of all, those things are so much fun. Like I can't, and to me as a, like, I don't play video games. They're so realistic. Mm-hmm. I've been like dying. There's this game that I keep seeing online, like people play like on TikTok, where there's like a plank, you're like, walk a plank. It's funny because they freak out. They're like, oh God. And then like someone will push them over and they really feel like they're falling. And I'm like, oh, that sounds so cool. I want to do it. Oh my God. First of all, you think people are stupid because it's like, but you don't get it when you're in that VR game. Like it really feels like you're in the game.
Yeah.
And like, I was doing it. I was like walking the plank and then they have this little rocket, like an imaginary rocket, and you're supposed to jump on it and then you fly. Mm-hmm. But like my brain forgot, I don't need to really jump onto it. Like you can just like you kind of just whatever. We were in the garage, like, cause it was like the biggest open space. I launched myself onto this rocket virtually. Reality. I launched myself like across the garage and slammed my body chin so hard onto this like wooden box so close to the ski rack. And like, oh God, the fact that I didn't impale myself or like bludgeon my eye, shocking. And it was so painful. And I just remember like, but it was so funny. I was like, why God? And I know. My niece was so funny. She's like, you, there's a scuff on my VR headset now. I was like,
I was going to ask him, like, did you like break her?
I didn't break it. Thank God, because neither one of them would have forgiven me. Like if I had broken, even if my eye had popped out, but if I had broken that headset, they would have been like, Anthony ruined Christmas. And I'm like in the hospital, half alive. They're like, still let her die. She ruined our VR set. Oh my God. It was so embarrassing.
So it's like when you did that giant leap, you were really forgetting that you were not in virtual reality.
Really? And like, I knew, but like, I forgot that there were surroundings around me. Like, and right. I didn't, when I watched the video, because luckily or not luckily, I don't know, my ex-brother-in-law, my sister's ex-husband was filming while I was doing it, which thank God, because also the way I launched myself, like it wasn't like, I'm like, what was I thinking? And I really was trying to jump on this rocket. Like that was all I was thinking. Oh my God. And then I played again and it really is so scary because like I'm getting vertigo. Like I'm
right.
You can put a safety zone around where you play, like a virtual safety zone. So if you walk out of the zone, like it'll warn you.
Okay. Like is the virtual safety zone like actual?
The actual zone, which you can walk within, you know? So okay. Like if you cross the bound, which I was like, oh, that's smart.
So you wouldn't have launched into this wooden box.
Well, see, I don't know. I threw myself. So I don't know if I would have like left the safety zone and leaped. But once I was like, why would you jump like that? Like it was just so hard. And honestly, like, God, I wonder how many people do hurt themselves with this because you have to.
We could probably go on YouTube and just go down a rabbit hole of people destroying themselves in virtual reality games.
Oh, my God, 100%. But and it also kind of scared me how much I loved it. And like that VR headset, I looked it up. I was like, okay, do I want to spend? I could spend $300 and get myself one. But like, yeah. I mean, what kind of a loser would I be alone, like at home? Like,
I know.
There's games like if you can do Google Earth, this Google Earth game where you can like walk around cities in,
wow.
You know, like, so you can go to Paris and like walk around Paris, wow. Which is so cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
And me and my sister were talking like, wouldn't it be so cool? And maybe they have a game like this or they'll make one where if you could go back to times in history and like walk around the streets of New York in the 1920s or, you know, or experience a lot real life historical events, but like be there and like be in it. How cool. Going to the past, like that's what I want to do. And like go to historical events. Like, yeah, that would be so cool. Like go on the Titanic. Like, I don't know. I mean, it would be scary, but like,
no.
Oh, see, I'm going.
Yeah. No Titanic.
Or like you go back to Pompeii and just like run from the volcano. I mean, horrifying. But
yeah, see, you want to go back to these moments in history where like tragedy occurred. No, I just would like to go and check out the scene, like what it was like to walk around.
Yeah, that would be cool too.
Yeah, I'm not going to put myself on the sinking Titanic. I will legit have an anxiety attack and freak out or know that in moments I'm going to be buried underneath ash from volcano.
I know. Oh, I mean,
you crazy girl.
Well, listen, you got to make it a game. So I'm like a survival, but no, I think the walking around historical events, I mean, it was scary. Like when you fall off that plank in the game I played, you like fall from the building and you're just and then like you hit the ground and it like turns white.
Wow.
But it's like, you shouldn't be scared. I'm like, you're not, nothing really is happening, but
it feels so real. I've only tried it in the store and I really want it. But like you said, am I really going to buy it and like play by myself?
But I know.
I'm going to look into this. I mean, it's a frivolous purchase, but I don't know. What do we have going on?
But endless fun. Yeah. Like, no, it'd be so fun.
Right. We can't travel really because of COVID. I mean, might as well just travel in virtual reality.
Exactly. Travel in virtual reality. It's safe for everybody. Also, I posted that video of me and the amount of people, like, no one was worried about me. Like, I mean, the amount of comments that were just like, I've watched this so many times. Oh, I was like, you guys, like, I could be injured. And I have a cut on my chin. It hurts. But I even watch it over and over and I laugh so hard. I'm like, why is it so funny watching people fall?
I think it is the funniest thing that I watch America's Funniest Home Videos still. And I can't stop laughing. I love when people fall. I think it is the funniest thing.
It's so funny, but I mean, it's tragic. I mean, it's okay. But I fell on my knees, which I was like, God, again, after my scabs, like I like opened up the scab wounds on my knee. And I'm not a person that usually like has, like I have bruises, but like, I'm not an active person or like an athletic person. So it's not like I usually have like wounds and stuff. Now I'm like, I look like I'm like an athlete.
Right.
Like I'm sliding into first base on my chin.
Oh my God. I love that. Oh,
but other than that, things were great.
Okay.
So I think it's time. You want to get into it?
Yes. I'm so ready for I Love It. So Lisa Barlow, please cue it up.
I love this. I love it.
All right. We're back. Denise, let's start with you. What is your I Love It for the week?
So my first one is Emily in Paris. I flew to DC and like I left here 9 a.m. on December 22nd, which is when Emily in Paris came out on Netflix season 2.
Okay.
I downloaded all 10 episodes onto my iPad and I watched all of them on the plane ride there. Mm-hmm. And I was so depressed when it ended before my flight was finished.
Oh.
Because the episodes are so short. They're only like 30 minutes.
What?
I know. And I didn't know it was about to end because like I was just like watching it over and over. So the episodes were rolling into each other. And so when it was like no more episodes left, I could have cried. It's so good. And I don't give a shit what anybody says. Like, I know it's like cheesy and like kind of stupid and they're all wrong because also it isn't. It's like such fun. It's like really so much fun. And then the outfits are so cool, like beautiful.
I disagree. I disagree with the outfits, but everything else, go ahead.
I think the outfits are like pretty to look at. Like, I'm like, oh, like it's just, everything looks pretty. Maybe just like all the people on the show are very pretty too. Like the French people are very, everyone like just looks so chic and French.
So maybe it's just Emily that doesn't really look good, I believe, right?
Yeah. But Emily, the girl who plays her, I forget who she is. She's so pretty. Like she's just nice to look at.
Isn't it Phil Collins' daughter?
Oh, is it?
Phil Collins' daughter, hold on, which I should know who that is. Wait, so can you tell us about the synopsis of Emily in Paris? Because I only watched a couple episodes.
Oh, Molly, I cannot believe you haven't watched it. How did you get away with not watching season one?
No, I watched a couple episodes, but the costumes are so horrible. They're horrible, Denise. Like, honestly, I mean, yeah, it's Lily Collins. Lily Collins plays Emily Cooper.
Oh, I didn't know. So she plays like this. The premise is silly. And it's about this girl named Emily. And she works for a marketing company in America. And the marketing company opens up, like buys this social media marketing company in Paris. Mm-hmm. They're like taking over for this French company. But her boss is pregnant. So she can't go and handle the merger. So Emily goes. And so she's only supposed to go to France for... Ooh, I dropped my phone. So she's only supposed to go to France for a year, and she's like integrating with this French company. And the whole first season, it's like how the French are like, we don't work, and you work too hard, and you're disgusting, and you're trash American. And right. He's like, this. I'm just trying really hard. And like, she is like the stereotypical like Midwestern American girl. Like, no, everything will be happy. Like, look at, and also she's like a social media, she's a social media person. So she's like, right. It's a social media company. And like all of her ideas on social media are so dumb. Like they can't, like on the show, they're a genius and also very accurate to how people who work in social media at like for big corporations behave. And like the things they think are like, they're like, this is such a genius campaign. Like we're going to do this clever, dumb thing. And you're like, oh God, like cheesy. But, and then she lives in a building with this like hot, hot, hot. I didn't think he was so hot, hot, hot at first. He's like this very French looking guy and like lives below her. He's a chef on the show and he's dating this girl that she becomes friends with. But then they have like they fall in love and it's scandal, scandal because Emily is in love with the chef. The chef is in love with Emily. Are they going to tell his girlfriend, Emily's friend?
Drama.
Very drama.
Is his character named Gabriel?
Gabrielle. Yes.
Oh, Gabrielle. Okay. So that actor is Lucas Bravo. No idea who he is. Okay.
All he is Gabrielle, the chef.
Gabrielle.
Or I'm sure he's in a bunch of French things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It appears so. Yes.
You know, it is like stereotypical of what you imagine, like the French to be. They have cigarettes. They are all having affairs. Like they're all very liberal and open. And Emily is such a herb. And like, they don't work that hard. Why do they come? Like they come to the office at 11. Now, why is Emily working so much? Oh, yeah. God. Lovely to watch. I wouldn't wear any of the clothes, but well, it's like, you know, pretty. Like, there's just nothing ugly about the show. There's not one ugly person on there.
I will watch it because it is a feel-good, lighthearted, nothing bad happens. It's like right up my alley. Like
Gabrielle and Emily do sleep together. Ooh. And then and he breaks up with his girlfriend. But Emily, of course, the drama, she's like, we can't be together because of your ex-girlfriend's my friend. And then the ex-girlfriend finds out. And then it's this whole big, like, there is like drama, but it's the kind of drama like I need right now. You know, it's like fun drama.
Fun. It's nothing serious and dark serious. And painful. You're just like, thank God there's something light that we can indulge in.
The darkest thing about it is the fact that there's only 10 episodes and they're so short. I'm like, how dare they? Like, honestly, I waited a year for this and like each episode, like you can't even have them be an hour each. How dare you?
Well, this show is created by Darren Star, who created and produced Sex and the City. So if you guys like Sex and the City...
It definitely has that, like...
It's a watered-down version.
Yeah, it's, like, a fun vibe. I mean, there's sex in it. It was a little awkward, because, like, on the plane, I was, like, sitting in between. I was in the front row, because I had Bella with me, so, like, I needed the leg room. Uh-huh. But I was in the middle seat, so I had, like, a man to my left who was so nice, because I had my dog. And then there was a guy who was quiet the whole time, which I prefer, you know, like, don't talk to me.
Yeah.
But definitely when the sex scene came up on my iPad, I was like, are they looking? Like,
you're like, please don't.
And I was like, please hurry. But then I couldn't like lunge for the iPad and like fast forward. That would like, that would be too weird. You know? Yeah.
I'm
like,
and you're really bringing attention to it.
Yeah. I'm like, oh God, sex. Like I didn't want to do that. But then yeah, hopefully they were just not, they didn't catch their eye. But you know, either way.
Whatever.
It was great.
I did watch it and I will continue to watch it. It's just like not top on my list. That's all.
I feel like every time things that are like considered bad TV are almost always like
the best
female. Like, yeah, and they're usually like shows that are made for women or like women and gay men. It's like, oh, this is stupid and frivolous and dumb. And, you know, it's like such a bubblegum dumb show. And I'm like, okay, The Matrix was stupid and frivolous and whatever. Right. But you can like it. Like, I feel like it's just always things that are girly that are like poo-pooed. And that's why like Justice for Emily in Paris.
Emily in Paris. I love it, Denise. I love it.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to talk about the Kennedy Center Honors Ceremony. And I just want to mention it because I think this goes under the radar a lot. And that's a real shame. This is such a good show that's put on. It's not live. It's pre-recorded. It's about 2 hours long when it's on television. It started in 1978. And it's basically to celebrate people who have excelled in music, dance, theater, motion pictures, television, opera. And for me, and I think you feel the same way, Denise, we're both creative people. What would we be and do without the arts? So I am so glad that these people are celebrated. And it's so cool. They pick such a unique array of people every year. What is it, like 5 people that are selected?
Yeah, something like that.
So it's like a weekend-long event, and it's pretty much technically hosted by the president and first lady, whomever is president at the time. And there's a luncheon, there's a dinner, a White House reception, and then this whole gala performance. It's black tie, very, very fancy. And the performances are incredible. So like everybody sits up in the balcony and they wear these like rainbow badges or something with their medal on it. For example, Joni Mitchell was one of the honorees this year. Nora Jones sang one of her songs.
Bette Midler, I think, was this year too, right?
Bette Midler was another honoree, and Lorne Michaels was another honoree. Every year, I love it. It's right before Christmas that it airs. It's happy. It's fuzzy and warm, and I love it.
Can I just say, it is so on brand that year I love it is something on PBS, on public broadcasting. The Kennedy Center, have you been there?
No.
Mm-mm. You would love it. You would love it. It is so fancy. And like when you go to see a show at the Kennedy Center, you know, like people, when they go to Broadway, people wear jeans. Like it's acceptable to wear like really whatever to a Broadway show.
Yeah. Horrendous.
To the Kennedy Center, you have to dress up. It's so cool. Beautiful inside. Like there's a different stage, like, but it's so prestigious and like it feels very grand and beautiful. And there's like giant chandeliers and it's all red carpet. It's like very like elegant, I guess. It's like an
old school elegance.
The glamour is like there for sure.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, have you ever watched the show?
I have not watched. I worked at PBS. I knew it because like growing up in DC, you knew the Kennedy Center honors like very, right. And like, I think I probably watched it when I was younger, like when little, when my parents maybe watched it. Like, how do I put this delicately? I'm not an old person yet. So like, I love that you love it. And I think it's like, I get why.
Very entertaining. Very entertaining.
The target demo is definitely like over 60. Like even, I remember when we worked there because we were doing, because they were like planning the Kennedy Center honors, like who the honorees will be. And they have this other, it's like similar, like at the Kennedy Center, which that also is hosted by PBS, which is the Mark Twain Prize, like the Kennedy Center Mark Twain Prize, which goes to like they're honoring a comedian every year. Okay. And those things all happen at the same time.
Okay.
And when I was at PBS, they had picked Dave Chappelle, but it was like this big scandal because he was like young and like he brings in a different crowd and like, what is he going to say?
Ooh, it was like, gotcha. Okay. Yeah.
Whoever donates to PBS, which is old people.
Yeah.
Which stinks. Like, I think PBS, like public broadcasting is so important and like so valuable, but because they get so defunded, like the only money, like really they rely on donors, and the donors are just 99.9% elderly, like people over 60 with a lot of money.
Yeah, it's important.
Which is a bummer, but like, but it is so important. And I mean, it is so prestigious. They do know how, like when they put on a show like this, I appreciate how much effort, like it takes a whole year of planning, so many meetings, so many people involved. Like
you can tell.
And like, they want to make it feel very grand. And it's like, you know, it's not taken lightly, which is nice.
It is such an honor. I mean, it is such an honor to be recognized for your contributions to whatever your field is.
And I like that it's to the arts, and it's not like how the Oscars or things like that. It's like really, you know, to the arts. Especially the Kennedy Center is very good about appreciating like real like musicians, but like that are artistically driven, like that you've probably never heard of, and like dancers and artists who like are sculptors and painters and things. Like they take the art that you don't see anywhere else, where like the arts are that appreciated.
Yeah, I don't know where I'd be without art or the art world or being supported in the art community. So I am so grateful that this exists. And I obviously believe so strongly that the arts need to be more funded and focused on. It's not all about math and science.
Yeah. The Kennedy Center is actually so great about that too. Like, I remember when I was in high school, we had this thing called the Cappies. All the high school theaters in the DC metro area and like Northern Virginia, every year the school picked one of their plays or musical to enter, and like you're submitting it for
an
award. You had like 10 critics from each school that would, like, the critics would have to go to different shows, like I think at least 5 shows, to review them. And you'd have to write reviews that would get submitted and some would get published in the Washington Post. And it was all through with the Kennedy Center, like, supporting it. And then the end of the year, they have this, like, the Tonys, but for high school theater at the Kennedy Center. And you dress up and you feel so, you're like, oh my God, I'm so fancy.
That's amazing.
Amazing. That's something like that's so great about the Kennedy Center. They're the ones like really pushing and investing and doing that, which is awesome. Like, you know, there's just not anything else. Like, there's like so few places that do that.
It's true. It's true. So thank God for them. And I'm so glad that they can continue to be supported and funded, and just go on YouTube and watch some of the performances. They're amazing. Amazing.
You got to go to the Kennedy Center when you're in.
I will.
It's like so Molly. Yeah. It is like has your name all over it.
I didn't know that, but now I totally understand.
Yeah. Oh God, you would be perfect there.
Okay. I'm excited now. Love it. Okay. Denise, what is yours? Next up.
Okay, for my second, I love it. I'm going to pick something a little controversial because the reviews have been super mixed about this movie. Yeah, well, the reviews from like critics and like official media outlets and stuff, very negative. And like on Rotten Tomatoes, very bad score. But like the public, like from fans and like normal people, really good. Like people love it. And it's Don't Look Up on Netflix.
Okay.
Now, I've been anticipating this movie from when the trailer came out because it just looked really, really interesting. Like, I thought the premise was interesting. And they have, it's such a good cast. It's Leonardo DiCaprio, Meryl Streep, Jennifer Lawrence, Jonah Hill, Cate Blanchett, your fave.
My fave.
So good.
So good.
And, like, the premise is, like, depressing. It's supposed to be funny. And the premise, it's about these two scientists. It's Leonardo DiCaprio. Actually, they're astronomers. Leonardo DiCaprio is an astronomer teaching at Michigan State University. And Jennifer Lawrence is his PhD student. And they discover a comet. And they get all so excited. And, like, the very beginning of the movie, they're, like, celebrating, like, dorky scientists. Like, yeah, comet. Like, look at us. Like, we discovered something. And then they're, like, doing all these, like, calculations. And they realize the comet is heading straight towards Earth. And it's going to hit in 6 months.
Oh, my God.
And we've seen this movie before, like Deep Impact.
Yeah.
Armageddon. Like, you know, it's been there, done that.
Right.
A lot of people I know that watched it, who liked it and said it was good, they were like, it's just so uncomfortable because it's so realistic on how we would actually react in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. And it is. The beginning of the movie, I was like sitting so anxiously because I was like, oh my, what the? Because you see Jennifer Lawrence and Leonardo DiCaprio, they go to the White House and they're like two very intelligent, like science-minded people, but they're having a hard time articulating, like in layman's terms, the world is going to end and like how important it is.
Yeah.
And then like, you know, Meryl Streep is the president and she's like, well, we have like, we're picking out a Supreme Court justice right now, so we can't focus on this. And it's like, how gross. But then like, that is so how I would expect in the reality of how our politics work and how like just human nature.
Yeah.
There's this whole like part of it that's like all of the biggest news stories are about Ariana Grande, but she's not Ariana. Ariana Grande is the actress, but she's playing a pop star.
Okay.
And like she's breaking up with her boyfriend. It's like every line is about Ariana Grande breaking up with her boyfriend and all this stuff. And like everyone's so consumed by that. And then there's also a scandal with the Supreme Court pick. And so everyone's consumed by that. And no one can really give a shit less about like this comet, because also the scientists are like, they're having a hard time like explaining like this is really happening. And it's so uncomfortable and it's so realistic. And I've heard some critic reviews being like, it was too heavy handed. Like we know like they're pushing the point too hard that like, see how stupid we are. We're going to let all these bad things happen. Like it's so obnoxious. But I'm like,
no, yeah, it's not.
It is not. Also, I'm like, people, it's not heavy-handed enough because it's like, no, and even with COVID, like you see, like people, there's a whole part of the movie where there's like a hashtag, look up, so people will see the comet. But then there's an anti-comet campaign that's like, don't look up, don't look up, because they're like, the comet isn't real. And it's like, not until the comet is like literally entering And I mean, it's, they have like a, this one tech gazillionaire guy who's basically just a, an amalgamation of Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, and Bill Gates and those guys. And he's so creepy, but perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, the end scene was so brilliant to me. Like, it was just really well done. And Leonardo DiCaprio had, gives like a quick little speech and says something that's like, so I thought was really powerful. And I'm like, oh, man. And even still, like watching, I'm like, even still, if a comet was coming, I have no confidence that like we would be able to do anything about it, or that people would be able to. It's hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
That's why people like climate change. I even have a hard time like wrapping your mind around, like, they're like, it's going to kill you. Everything's bad. Like, everything's going to end like doom. And it's like, what is that?
It's very frightening to like really come to terms with. Is that really the reality? Is that really what our future is? Because you don't want it to be. And you're like, oh, but it's like not happening now. But I'm like, well, why is it 55 degrees in December? Sorry. Like,
yeah. And like with climate change, it happens. It's happening pretty slowly. Well, and not, and now, I mean, it's kind of like you see all these storms and stuff, but with even the comet, like if an asteroid was coming towards Earth and they're like, we're all going to die, I think like we would still be on till the end of the, to the very end, you'd be believing like the government will knock it out of the sky. Like they're going to figure it out.
Right. You know? They'll take care of it. They'll fix they'll it take for care. Us.
Exactly. And it's the same with the climate. You're like, some, they'll figure it out, right? Like they're gonna,
someone will help us, right? Like someone will make it better, but then you're, but then you're seeing the people so vocally against it and saying it's not real. It's not a big deal. None of this is happening. And I'm like, I'm sorry, did you go to school to be a scientist? Who the hell are you? So there's got to be some truth to all of this stuff.
Yeah. And in the movie, it's funny because they trust that billionaire. They're like, he, like NASA, it is able to probably shoot it out of the sky.
Yeah,
but they canceled those plans because the Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk guy is like, no, this is, we actually need the materials that are in that comet so that for mining, so that we can have better cellular frequency. And so I have been like building this thing, and he's like, he has all the top scientists in the world on his team, and it's a private company, but they're like, we're gonna trust him. And of course, it's all bullshit. Like, it doesn't work. And everyone's like, at the very last second, they're out, like looking like, are you serious? He's like, oops. Like, ew.
No.
And you're like, oh my God, because you can see it so easily happening. And the acting was so, I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio to me, I don't, you know, on a personal level, I kind of find him a little irritated. I mean, and his crusade for climate change is like, I'm great. I'm grateful, but also a little like, shut the fuck up, because, you know, I just feel like he rides on private planes. Like he's not, I'm like, what are you? And like, you're hanging out with Jeff Bezos. Why couldn't you? He's like always talking about, we need to be, there's 100 companies. We need to be dealing directly with them. I'm like, well, when you're in rooms with them that I'm not, like, you're letting Jeff Bezos's girlfriend hang all over you. Are you saying anything to him? Like,
oh, that's right. That picture. Yeah. I think Leonardo DiCaprio, well, the reason he did the movie is because he's so big on climate change.
Yeah. Which actually that changes, like, you know, I do have a lot of respect for him. And he's such a good actor. And in the, I mean, Jonah Hill is so good in this movie.
Oh, I'm sure.
So good. Cate Blanchett's character, it's unfortunate. Like, she has a stupid character, but she can do anything and everything. And she's perfect. She's
a genius. I know.
Jennifer Lawrence was so good. Timothy Chalamet is in it. And he has like a small part, but perfect. I mean, it's just stacked. And yes, it's depressing, but it's such a good movie. I think it'll probably win. Well, we'll see. You never know with Oscars, and also who cares about the Oscars, but.
Yeah, I mean, I care still, but I know a lot of people hate them, so whatever.
It's like, do they reward usually the best movie? Like, not always.
No, not always.
You know, like Leonardo DiCaprio won for The Revenant. Was that the first one he won?
Yeah, he did win for that. I didn't see it, but.
Me neither. I'm like, there's so many movies he's done where he deserved probably to win. And then this one, I mean, he's so good, but we'll see. It's not funny. That's the thing. Like, I thought I was going to be laughing, and you don't. There's a couple quips by like Jonah Hill, but you're too on edge that it's hard to laugh.
I know. I want to watch it because I know the writer and director is Adam McKay, and he's phenomenal. You know, Adam McKay did Anchorman, and he did all the movies with Will Ferrell, Step Brothers, and because of all the actors. So that's what draws me in. So anytime it's a movie that's like about a subject that I really don't want to be involved in, I don't want to watch, it's going to scare me or depress me or whatever, then I go, but the actors, the writer and director are so good. So I am torn because this is a subject that really gives me massive, massive anxiety. So I am not sure if I should watch it.
I will say, like, the end scene, it's not like a happy ending per se, but like it does give you peace. Like, I felt settled because like it's okay. Like the whole movie, like they're freaking out, like their emotional roller coaster and like sure. on edge. And like, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is like scared, depressed, like screaming. And then there's like a peacefulness at the end.
Okay.
Between them. And they're like just sitting at this dinner table. And that dinner table scene made me feel, it wrapped up things for me in a way. Like, I didn't leave the movie feeling anxious, depressed, and scared. I was like, I mean, it's sad, but I'm at peace.
I think because there is hope, and that's what everybody's saying. Like, you guys, we can make this better. We can turn this around. You just have to believe in the possibility of making it better.
Yeah.
So I'm imagining the ending with something like that. Like, there is hope and we can mm-hmm. do something about it, but.
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, okay. like, I mean, sort of. And Leonardo DiCaprio says something. It's like, he's like, we really had everything, didn't we? And it's yeah. like, yeah, we really had everything. And it's like all these little things that you watch and you're like, you can hate everything, like, and everything is miserable and doom and gloom, but really, like, we got it pretty great. And so maybe,
yeah,
I don't know if it'll persuade anyone to care more or yeah. do anything. And it's not, I don't see it persuading like a Chevron to.
Right. But it's taking a stand.
It's taking a stand. And it's like, I think a really brave move. I have like a Hollywood movie to do this with all of these actors is pretty remarkable. And I think the reaction yeah. from the bigger, I don't want to say mainstream, but like the bigger media outlets and stuff like mm-hmm. in the is telling in a lot of ways because it's a harsh criticism of them.
Right.
But it's interesting. Like the, you know,
it's a really cool way to bring awareness that you can't ignore.
Yeah. For sure.
You can't ignore an A-list Hollywood film about a real subject that a lot of people think is bogus and not worth entertaining. So I think yeah. it's cool.
Did you ever watch Veep?
Oh, I love it.
So good. But like on Veep, they never distinguished like which party she was in. You know, like was she Democrat? Was she Republican? Like you never knew.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot. Like, yeah, you could equate Meryl Streep. Is she Trump? I don't think so. Like, it's kind of to me, she's like every politician, depending on what side you're on.
Got it.
You know, like she's going to be Trump to you if you hate Trump. She's going to be like Hillary Clinton to you if you hate Hillary Clinton. Like, she's going to be the one you hate.
Interesting.
So I think
that's cool. That's really cool, actually.
I'm sure that whatever their intention was, but they never label which party she's in or anything. And it's like all of the government is unable to react or do anything.
Sure.
So it's not like blaming which one side or the other.
Sure.
Which I thought was good.
That's really good. I'm going to have to watch it, and I'll watch it like in the morning so I can have the whole day to process my anxiety. Get it out. It sounds like an excellent movie. Thank you for that suggestion.
Oh, you're welcome. Okay. What's your second? I love it this week.
Okay. So I finally watched the Being Ricardos movie.
Ooh, yes. How was it?
So Being the Ricardos on Amazon Prime, it came out December 21st. And I was super nervous because it wasn't getting like good ratings. And it was a lot of like questionable things. So I really loved it. But okay, let me say why I loved it first. I thought the actors all gave it wow, like such a hard effort. Now, Javier Bardem, who played Desi Arnaz, he got everything about Desi Arnaz down, like his accent, his mannerisms. Just, do I know Desi Arnaz the person? No, I don't. But I can see how he was Desi Arnaz. And he looks nothing like him, but everything else was on point. And by the way, I know we discussed another time in our podcast that like we hate Desi for what he did to Lucy, but like he's just so likable. He's so likable.
He does seem likable.
I know. He's so great. So I really liked him. But J.K. Simmons played Fred Mertz, or played William Frawley, who plays Fred Mertz. He got him down to a T, his nastiness, his gravelly voice, everything. And then this other actress, I don't know her. I think she's more on Broadway, but my husband knew who she was. Nina Arianda, she played Vivian Vance, who plays Ethel Mertz on the I Love Lucy show. They all did fantastic. Nicole Kidman.
I was waiting for the shoe to drop on Nicole.
Okay. The effort was massive.
That's so terrible. That is not a comment. You're like, she tried really hard.
You can tell, like, she's never done a role like this before. She worked so hard at The Voice. She had Lucille Ball's mannerisms. I think she worked hard at her voice. Like, she has a pretty deep kind of smoker's voice. But then when she played Lucy Ricardo, which is a much more high-pitched, happy-go-lucky voice, it's like, I don't want to say she was bad. She wasn't bad.
They could have picked such a, like, why did they pick her? But it's weird that they wouldn't find someone more perfect for this role.
I had heard years ago that Cate Blanchett was attached to this.
She would have been amazing. She's amazing at everything.
She's amazing at everything. And I was like, oh, perfect. I don't know where Nicole Kidman came from. I don't know if it's because Nicole Kidman, I read this interview Edie Falco did, and she was like, everything goes to Nicole Kidman. Like, it does. Like, she does.
It does feel like everything goes to Nicole Kidman.
And she's great. Like, I'm not saying she's not great. I don't know.
But she's also Nicole Kidman in every role. Like, she kind of doesn't translate
well into, she doesn't become this other person.
Yeah, she doesn't. Like, she's still, you always know that it's Nicole Kidman.
So it's like, I still felt Nicole Kidman peeking through when she was playing Lucille Ball. And I think it was really hard for her to play Lucy Ricardo because I don't know if she's ever done comedy before. And her, you know, she's a lot more, I think, she's thinner framed, like her shoulders are smaller than Lucille Ball's. I think she's a little thinner than Lucille Ball. I mean, you know, the costumes and the hair were exceptional. It was on point. I don't know. I think the reason I loved the movie so much is because I love behind the scene movies. Obviously, I love Lucille Ball and I love Lucy Show. And it was really fun as a fan to watch this whole week unravel. And it was really fun to see somebody play the real Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz and even everybody else on the show. The characters that I loved was the writers and producers of the show. I loved seeing them in the writer's room. So it's Jesse Oppenheimer, Bob Carroll Jr., and Madeline Pugh. They all wrote and produced the I Love Lucy show, and they also worked on the radio show My Favorite Husband, which is pretty much the character of Lucy Ricardo that became the I Love Lucy show.
I started watching the movie, and I want to finish it, but it started weird. Like, now I'm forgetting. Like, it's not like a movie, isn't it? Like a movie within a movie or something. Mm-hmm. Like, they're retelling the story, but like, and they're like talking to camera, like they're doing like a documentary style interview.
Yeah. So in the beginning, it's the writers and producers, the three of them, like as though they're telling a story today. So a lot of the movie was flashback. And if you don't know what's going on, like my husband got really confused watching it. He's like, I don't understand what's happening. And I was like, oh, well, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know that? I'm like, well, I know the whole history. Like, I know everything. So I could see how you get confused because it wasn't like 1920 to 1950. It was like 1942, 1948, 1952. So you get confused if you really don't know. Like, he's like, I didn't know that she did a radio show. Like, what's this about?
Yeah.
I could see how that confuses you.
And the talk to camera took me out. Like, there was something about that I was like, what is this?
You mean with the older people, right?
That's with the older people. And is that only in the beginning? Do they not do that anymore throughout it?
They do it a little bit more and then they do it at the end. I didn't find that necessary at all. I didn't think it was necessary to have that in the movie. I mean, I feel like the writers and producers were exceptional. And did you ever watch Arrested Development?
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot or not really?
No, not a lot. I'm not Arrested Head.
Arrested Head, is that what they're called?
Oh, no, that's, I don't know. I made that up.
Okay, well, do you know who Tony Hale is? He's in Veep. He plays.
Oh, yeah, he says, of course.
Oh, he's one of my favorite actors. He's amazing. He's so funny. So he's in Arrested Development. He's in Veep. He plays Jesse Oppenheimer, the executive producer of the show. And then Alia Shawkat plays Tony Hale's niece in Arrested Development. So it was really fun seeing the two of them in this movie together. It was fun. I'm going to watch it again, but I think I'm going to watch it again because I'm such a fan. You know what I really liked also about it was the behind the scenes, just all the behind the scenes. And because I work on a movie and TV set, so that's really fun for me too. It's also familiar.
Do you hope they make a different I Love Lucy movie? Like, is it disappointing that this is the one biopic about her so far? Yeah.
I feel like it could have been perfect and it wasn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Hopefully they'll make a different one. Like, it's just that's a bummer. And I'm still going to watch it.
This is like the biggest budget one they've ever done on her life. Like, they've done a lot of like stupid, like, you know, Hallmark version ones.
I was a little worried when it was on Amazon Prime. Like, for whatever reason, like, Amazon Prime shows, like, they don't hit as hard. Amazon doesn't always like nail the landing for whatever reason. Like, if it was on a different streaming service, I would have been more confident that it would be for sure good. Aaron Sorkin is so hard because I love his show. I like, I love The Newsroom and I love The West Wing, but his dialogue, like, it's tough. And I don't know if he was the right voice for her story. He does politics well. Like, you know, with The Newsroom, it's very like, ba 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 ba. And like in The West Wing, it's like banter, 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 talking about politics, politics, politics. It's like, and it works well in those situations, but maybe in a biopic about Lucille Ball, even though it involved like the Red Scare and all of that, which is like something he would be good at.
And yeah, of course, that was like kind of what it was centered around, was, you know, her being accused of being a communist, but it wasn't all about that at all.
But he's not good at relationships. Like, his relationships are always pretty cold. Like,
yeah,
he's bad at like human deep
relationships. Because now I'm looking, I'm just looking at shows, you listed a lot of them, but you're right. Now I'm looking at just the array of what he's done. And I'm like, Being the Ricardos doesn't really seem to fit in. Like, Moneyball, Steve Jobs, A Few Good Men, The American President.
It's like, it's just like a different.
Yeah. And I could really, now that I'm thinking about those films, I see how this is such an Aaron Sorkin movie.
Everything that he does is like, he's all over that. Like,
yeah.
You can't hear the dialogue without hearing him typing away on his computer, like, you know, and like, he's like a polarizing character in real life. Like, I think his personality, but I think he's a brilliant screenwriter. I love most of his shows and movies, but this translation for him, like, too technical, too cold. I don't know.
I'm going to watch it again. I kind of wish I watched it again before we spoke about it, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to watch it again and see how I feel. I really think the best part was the relationship between the writers and producers behind the scenes.
And that makes sense. That would have been the best part of him, like, that Aaron Sorkin was able to convey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's a very good point. Look, it was done so well. The set design, you know, all that visual stuff is perfect. Perfect. But I don't know. I can't, like, Nicole Kidman was great. The effort was incredible, but I see Nicole Kidman. I see she didn't complete. You know how there's some actresses that just become the person?
Nicole Kidman is not one of them.
Kate Blanchett becomes everyone she plays. Why she wasn't on. I'm sorry. And Nicole, I think you're great, but
Nicole's listening right now at home in Nashville with Keith Urban. And she's like, can you believe? I don't know how you do an Australian accent. Like, can you believe? But that was, she's mad. She's upset. You're hurt. She's hurt. She's crying all the way to the bank, you know?
Yeah, crying all the way to the bank. Exactly. So anyways, I recommend it. I would watch it. Personally, I loved it. And I definitely think it's worth watching. Definitely worth watching.
Sweet. Okay. Maybe I'll watch it tonight.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a little break and we'll be back with What Do You Think? Did you watch the Sex and the City episode last week?
I did not. I am behind on, well, we should specify on.
Oh, Sex and City. And then there's, what is it? I can't even remember the name of this.
And Just Like That.
And Just Like That. Yeah, I hate them. Like, I can never remember, like, whatever. And Just Like That. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to have watched it. But there was like, so we know they've been destroying Miranda's character this whole season. Like,
yeah.
She's like maybe an alcoholic. She's also like the most stereotypical woke white Karen woman. You know, she's super dumb, clumsy. She's maybe a lesbian. I'm really unsure where they're.
That's crazy.
Like, she's going all these directions and you're like, what? Miranda? She's supposed to be like, she's got her shit together. I thought.
What's happening?
And so this last episode, she goes to dinner with her professor. Okay. And I thought it was going to be like a dinner where her professor is like giving her a lecture where she's like teaching and Miranda's like, I'm so like, what's it like being black? Or like saying something so horrible, or like that you would just be like, no, why?
Right.
You know?
Right.
But it wasn't. And it was actually like a good scene with them. Okay. And the professor asks her about her son. And she's like, oh, you're so lucky that you have a son. I'm trying to have a kid with my husband. We're on IVF. We've been trying, and it's really, really hard. And I'm so scared. Like, if I never have one, you're so lucky you got to have a kid when you did. And Miranda's like, ah.
Right.
And like Miranda goes into this whole thing where she's like, you know, I wouldn't say I don't regret it. Mm-hmm. I don't regret having Brady, but I wouldn't say I don't not regret having Brady. It's been really hard, and you always regret the path not taken. And you look back and you think like, why? Like, what could I have done? I could have been a human rights lawyer by now. I could have done all of these things, but I'm happy he's here, but it's hard either way.
Yeah.
And so like, she's giving her advice, like, you're going to regret it whether or not you have a kid or not. Like,
right.
You'll regret it if you do, because you're going to regret the path not taken. You'll regret what it's already doing probably to the marriage that we see with her husband and her. It's like very uncomfortable because like they're dealing with IVF, which like the pressure that puts on their marriage. And you'll have regrets about that. You'll have regrets about how things turn out. But if you don't have one, you won't know what you missed out on, so you'll regret it too. And I thought that was so powerful.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I think that's such an important, I'm just happy to see a TV show even address that, because I think it's such an issue for women, especially our age, like women in their 30s, like as like fertility is like that knocking on your door and you're like, what am I going to do about this?
Are you going to do this?
Yeah. Like, time's ticking, like now or never. And you're like, oh God.
Yeah, because I mean, I think you and I grew up, I almost feel like we're like the last generation to grow up with the mindset of, oh, like, of course we're going to have children. And of course we're going to have them like at 25. Like, of course, that's what you do. And then when we became someone in our 20s and now we're in our 30s, the world seemed to shift so much for us in such an unexpected way where it's like, well, it's not that easy and it's not that simple. And that's not always the answer. And I know this has been going on for a while, but as the decades go on, women become so much more empowered in their careers and love their careers and really struggle to decide, do you have a kid? Do you not have a kid? And when? And will it mess up my career? What choice do I make? Will I regret it? Question, question, question.
Yeah. And with who? Because this is also like still a situation where like you could think like your best boyfriend or husband, but then when it comes like you have a kid with them, you're like, oh, like they can't, right. That suddenly like I think so much of the burden sometimes in some situations, like it's a fear where it'll end up coming down on you. It just, you never really know until you're in the situation like how a partner will handle it. And like it could be the opposite, but like I'm a woman, so I only care about it from my perspective of like, I would be, how scary that would feel. Cause I've had a dog with someone before.
Yeah.
Where I was like, oh God, like, you know, they come and they can have all the fun, but then it's all the labor that you put into it.
Yeah.
And also like the idea when we were growing up, I never thought about it too much. Cause I was just like, it's an inevitable, like you have a kid, there's no choice. Like, and is it a choice? Like, no, it's just a thing that definitely will happen. Yeah. And there's like, that's just it.
Yep. Just do it.
Just do it.
And there's no question about it. So I'm a family of 3 kids. You were a family of 2 kids. And I even thought the idea of like one kid, like made no sense. Like who has one kid? Like what? Why would you do that? And you know, now I have 2 stepdaughters, but I have 1 child and I think we're going in the direction of just having 1 child. And I grew up thinking, well, like, obviously I'm going to have like 3 to 5 kids because like, duh, like that's what you do. And now I'm like, I don't think I can handle or I don't think I want one more than one because of the lifestyle we all want to have as a family. And I am still in that place. So, you know, because my husband's older, he's like, listen, I got 3 kids, like I'm good. And I'm kind of like, I hear you, but if you were younger, if you didn't have your 2 daughters, would we have another kid? Probably. And that's when you go, am I going to regret it? Am I going to regret having a kid? I had such a wonderful pregnancy, delivery, wonderful child. Do I want a second child? What if there's problems? Like, what if, what if, what if? And like you were saying to intro this, it's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, or you regret what you do and you regret what you don't do. So just make the choice and be happy with it. And I believe every choice we make is almost predestined for us. So it's what was meant to be for me anyways, you know?
Yeah. And I think the accepting of the idea, like no matter what you choose, you're going to have the hard moments and like, you're going to have to think about what you didn't get, like the path you didn't take. And at some point in your life, either regrets or just like questions. And also
you wonder.
I'm still unsure. I waver. I flip and flop from like literally day to day, week to week about, I'm like, do I want to have a kid or do I want one because I feel like I'm supposed to have one?
Yeah.
And then I'm afraid of regretting it if I don't have one. But then the idea of like having a child makes me physically like terrified and ill. Like I'm like, oh God. And like I can't. There's like nothing about it. Like being pregnant sounds appealing. Like that sounds cute and fun. But like idea of like having to even like, I have a dog and that's like a lot.
I know.
But I know like you will make things work.
Mm-hmm. You do.
My mom said this, like you see a kid in a restaurant, you're like, oh God, like I cannot. Like they're so, and she's like, but not your kid. Your kids won't be like this. Dude. And I'm like, you don't know.
Yeah.
I could do everything right. And that kid could still be an asshole and could grow up to be an ungrateful asshole who puts me in a nursing home and never comes to visit, you know?
Like, I know. You're right. It's all possible. But I think that if you have a baby, you just do your best and that's all you can do. And you just hope you raise a good human being. Some kids legit are born, like, you know, the kids that are born that like kill animals at 3 years old. You're I mean, I'm not sure what you do about that. I don't know what to tell you if your kid's doing that. But
but it's like funny because like I know so many asshole adults like or asshole parents, like shitty parents who raised amazing kids. Like,
yeah.
Like kids came out great. Their trauma they dealt with, they figured out how to deal with the fact their parents were shitty. And then I know a lot of people who had seemingly like pretty decent parents, like that didn't do much wrong, but they're like complete mutant people that you're like, put them back inside, let them cook a little more because they did not, whatever happened in there, they didn't get out right. For me, for parents, I'm like, you can only do so much.
Yes.
But like you have no control.
I think at the end of the day, you don't have control over certain things. Like we were actually just talking about that at dinner with my family. There's a family member of ours who is just really different from the parent. And there's nothing wrong with the way this child is. Like this child is wonderful in their own way, but the parent doesn't understand this child. And so this parent feels the child is like problematic. And it's like, no, there's nothing wrong. It's just, you don't know how to deal with a kid like this. So yeah, you sometimes get matched up with a child that is nothing like you. And I think it's up to you to change and evolve. And but it's like, are you going to be that kind of person? I don't know. You know, this is where it's like,
because we're all human too.
Like,
parents are just former children. Like we're not, there's no like special superhero cape. Like anyone can become really a parent. Yep. And that's terrifying because it's like, there's nothing when you're little, you think of your parents as like, oh wow, they're special, superhuman.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh no, they're just people. Like, there's human people that decided to have sex and have me. Like, did they really even think about it that well? Like how ready were they? How qualified were they? Zero, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when I would get mad at my parents when I was younger, my dad would say to me, you know, we're just doing our best. There's no rule book here. We're just trying to figure it out like you are. And he's right. Like he was right. He still is right with that mentality. It's like, there is no rule book. We're all, like you said, we're still people. They're still people trying to understand each other just because we were born from you or maybe not. Like even if you're adopted, you're just different personalities trying to understand each other. So is it going to be simple and all butterflies and rainbows? Of course not. It never is. And like, you know, you could have an amazing baby and then have like a shit kid who's, you know, like you don't know.
And the cost, that's the other thing for me where I'm like, how did people back in the day, and by that I mean like when we were growing up, afford like 7 kids or like even 3 kids, 4 kids? I'm like, who, like how?
Life was not as expensive as it is today. Life is so expensive today, it's disgusting. You know, you see the stupid articles that are like, oh, people aren't having kids today, and they make up some stupid reason. It's like, no, because we literally can't afford it because we're not making the money we should be making. And that price of gas and cars and owning a home is legit impossible. So what do you want us to do?
Yeah.
You can't have five kids today unless you have a lot of money.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Or you struggle, or you're really like, you know, your means are very small. And, you know, and that's another thing. Like, me and Tommy are like, well, he has two kids and we have one child together. And it's like, to have one more would so dramatically change our lifestyle and finances. It's probably the biggest reason, more than anything, that it's probably not the path we're going to take.
Yeah. And that's, I mean,
it's sad. It's really sad. But regardless, that is the life and the world I'm currently in within my situation. Unfortunately, it's not 1950 money-wise.
Yeah.
I wish it was, but it's not. And, but to go back to sort of that point you were, or that question you were asking, like, will you regret? Will you not regret? I went through that as I started to get into my 30s, because now I was reaching a point of, oh, I'm making a good living. I can do whatever I want. I can travel. I can buy whatever I want for myself. I can really just do what I want to do. Sleep in, go out to dinner, whatever I want. And I started to really relish in it and enjoy it, which I'm so grateful I allowed that for myself, because then I feel like that's almost when my baby came to me, so to speak, because I finally gave in and accepted and appreciated my so-called like single life. And I say that because my husband and I, you know, we're not married until recently, and he gave me the freedom to be on my own. Like, if I wanted to go visit my girlfriends, like if I wanted to visit you, he'd be like, yeah, go ahead. Who cares?
Yeah.
So I started to get into this place, this headspace of, I like my alone time. I like that I can go do what I want. I like my money. But there was a part of me that was like, I need a baby. I need it. And I'm in a different, like, I have a different mentality about it now, because when I was younger, I was like, oh, I just want a baby. Like, I want it. I wasn't ready for one. Now I was. And he has definitely filled a hole in me that needed to be filled. And I feel like I've proven myself correct, that he is what I needed in my life. And I feel incredibly fulfilled so much. And I'm like, sure, we're still lacking things in life, but is life ever perfect? Are you ever going to have everything you want? No. And so I look at my life now and I'm like, I'm actually really happy. I think I'm the happiest I've ever been. So having Nico, yeah, like maybe I can't work right now because of the many circumstances I can't, but I'm so happy with him. So would I have known that's the answer? No, but it's a choice I made, and here I am, and it's going well for me.
I'm so jealous of, I have friends who are like 100%, they know definitively, they're like, I never want kids. I do not want them. They have that 100% certainty, like where I'm like, do you ever wonder? And they're like, nope, not once. And like, yeah, a lot of those friends I have, like, they're married. They've been married for a while. And I'm like, really? Never? I'm like, never, but you're married and like make good, decent money. And they're like, no, absolutely not. And I'm like, wow. And then I have friends who know for sure and always knew for sure they wanted to have a child. And they were like, that's a thing I want. Like, there's no question. If like an accident happened, like they were going to, they're like, I'll keep it no matter what. It's mine. Like, I want it.
Right.
And I'm like, wow. Yeah. I am just jealous of the certainty either way, because I've never felt 100% or even like 80% confident in either decision.
Agreed. I agree. And I am jealous. I'm envious of those people. There was someone I worked with. She's probably in her mid-50s now. And she's like, we always allowed for me to get pregnant and it just never happened. And we agreed that if it doesn't happen, it's okay. And we're good with it. And I'm like, really? You know, like, and she's like, no, we have a great life and it just wasn't meant for us. And I'm like, impressed and amazed. Like, that's amazing to have that mindset. It's very healthy, I feel. So there are people like that. And then there are people who are like, it sounds like you and me are, who are sort of like, I don't know the right way to go. How do I feel? Will I regret? Blah, blah, blah. I am happy to hear that a show like, And Just Like That is promoting that mentality.
Yeah, being honest about it. And I feel like it's such a conversation I have with girlfriends and in my personal life, but like I never really hear, it's so taboo almost still. And like people still, the standard question you ask when someone is, when they get married, or even like, I mean, I'm not married. And like people still ask me, they're like, well, don't you want to have a kid? I'm like, how dare you? What if I can't? Or like, what if I don't?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
That also, even my decision, like, I don't know. My circumstances will probably dictate. And how it's such a question people think it's okay to ask.
It's very rude.
Yeah.
You should never ask that question because, like you said, what if I can't and I really want to? And for you to just so flippantly ask me that is so inappropriate. Nobody should ask that question at all. At all.
Ever.
Let somebody offer it up to you and have that conversation. But don't assume, don't ask, because you don't know what people are going through. The circumstances are just so vast now of people wanting to have a family and struggling to have a family. It's just, let people come to you with that conversation. And then just like you're saying, like for you particularly, you're like, I'm not sure. Do I? I don't know. Maybe I do. I think I do. But it's like, I don't want to have to answer that question to you, like Aunt Josephine. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Nature will tell.
Yes.
Because I know I don't want one now.
Right.
And maybe I will. I don't know if that will ever change. And maybe if it's like I met someone I really wanted to have a, you just never know. And I can only tell from like this moment how I feel and right. whether or not like when I'm 50, am I going to regret that I didn't just suck it up and like do it when I had the chance? Like, I hope not.
I don't think so. You make very considered choices. You don't just go after like, oh, like I just think I should do it. So I'm just going to do it. I think if you make considerate choices, you don't regret things. Listen, I just think everybody needs to think about the decisions they make. That's the bottom line. Just think about the repercussions and what life is going to look like. Don't think about what life looks like today. Don't think, oh my God, it'll be so much fun to be pregnant. Well, what is it going to look like when you have the baby?
Yeah. And like when the baby's like 16.
Yeah. There's a lot to consider. It's not just about today. It's about, I mean, at least the next 21 years, at the very least.
Yikes.
But I mean, listen, I am so happy with my child. When I got pregnant, it was like, I had been pretty fixated on getting pregnant. But yeah, I had reached an age where I was like, is this what I really want? Or am I thinking it's what I really want? We have a really nice life, but with just the two of us, we could go on vacation all the time and do whatever we wanted. And we could both just work a ton and a baby would change everything. And my husband especially knew that because he has two daughters already.
Yeah.
So I was with somebody that was like, hey, like, I know how life's going to change when we have a baby. And that made it hard too, that somebody's saying that to me because he's saying it to me in a way that's not necessarily positive.
Yeah. He's like, just like, well, I know. And Miranda, I think, says that like how the kid will upend your relationship. And it depends on the strength of your relationship before, on like how it happens. But I think maybe some people think the baby will bring them together. Mm-mm. Or they want it so badly, they ignore the
Problems.
The red flags, you know?
So I want to say to that, an old school mentality is when you have problems in your marriage, you should have a child to fix it.
Oh God.
That is the worst decision you could make. So if anyone thinks, anyone listening thinks that that is potentially the solution, that will literally ruin your life. So do not do that. Do not do it. Leave the marriage. Life will be so much better than having to have a baby with somebody that you really didn't want to, because you're stuck with that person for, again, at least 21 years.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about, this may be like off topic, but like people who stay married just because of their children?
Wrong. Absolutely. 1,000% wrong. You don't do that. And here's why. So my husband struggled with that when he was divorcing. He's like, I feel like I'm ruining my kid's life. I feel like if me and my wife divorce, I'm destroying my kid's life. And so I spoke to my cousins about it. My cousin's parents divorced and they had a really bad marriage. My cousin said to me, yeah, it was hard, but I was so happy to see my dad happy for the first time in my entire life. He was somebody that I had never known before. And let's say your parents divorce when you're 10. I'd rather live a life with divorced parents and a happy mom and dad than an unhappy, miserable mom and dad, just so they can live under the same roof.
Yeah.
Look, this is not all across the board. Some parents can do it right. I don't know, but I think you can't hide the misery. You can't hide that you're unhappy.
I 100% agree with you.
Yeah. I know it's hard in the moment. I believe, we both believe that his daughters are happier seeing their father happy. I can't speak for how they feel about their mother, but as far as their father goes, I know that they are happy to see how I make their dad happy. And that's amazing.
If you stay in an unhappy marriage, your kids are going to then see how you treat each other and then learn that behavior of like, oh, that's what love looks like. And that's what a relationship is. And that's so dangerous and bad for your kids.
Very dangerous and bad. And we have friends that grew up like that amongst an unhappy family. And I do believe it screwed up their relationships as adults, you know, because that's all they know. That's what they've learned. We can't always make the right decision, but like, I'm really glad I didn't have a child with my ex. But had we, you know, we would have been okay. Like, we would have worked it out. But for us to stay together just for a child, we might have. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's, who knows? And luckily, I don't have to know the answer.
Thank God.
And he's better off. I'm better off. It's all good. But
no, for sure. Molly, this was such a good conversation. I appreciate all your answers. You made me think.
Good. I mean, this is a conversation we can circle back to a lot.
Yeah.
I think if anyone out there wants us to discuss this more, please write us and let us know, because this is a tough subject.
Yeah, I'd love to hear. I mean, it's like one of those questions I want to ask everyone I know, but yeah. You can't. Yeah, but it's so like, yeah. So please, if you have any thoughts or you have an opinion, send it to our email. It's gossipthat'sgoodforyou@gmail.com.
Oh, I'm excited.
All right, we're going to take another quick break and we'll be back with tips.
All right, so we're back with our tips for the week. Denise, do you want to start with your tip?
I travel a lot. And like before the panorama and in the midst of it, like I was living out of a suitcase a lot of the time and my stuff was in storage. And like every time I travel, like the one thing that's fundamental to packing for any trip is pack less than you think you're going to need to pack. Pack the smallest luggage possible, because you will never wear all those clothes. You don't need 12 pieces of underwear. Carrying that shit around is going to so much more annoying. Like, it doesn't matter. You're probably not even going to take pictures every night of your vacation. So like the fact that you have a different outfit every night is worthless. Like,
totally.
Who cares? Pick like two outfits that you want pictures in, pack those. And then everything else just wear over and over again. I've never regretted not packing stuff. I've always regretted bringing too much. And like, I cram, I have like a really great little carry-on, mm-hmm. and I can cram so much in there with those packing bags. But every time I do, it's like, I still have too much.
Really?
Like in Mexico, I had like a cute outfit I planned every night.
Okay.
For what reason? Like, for what reason? I could have worn the same dress two nights in a row. No one's going to know. Who's there to judge me?
You're so right.
I'm not a celebrity. Like, people aren't taking my pic. And it's like one cute dress, like, and then two cute. I mean, you just never need as much as you think you need. And it's like actually a pain in the ass lugging that shit around.
Yeah. And like a tropical vacation, like you're just laying at the beach or pool the whole time anyways.
You're yeah. And I packed like a different bathing suit for every day, which Denise, like.
Right. Come on.
Stupid. Yeah. And then, and also like the shoes. No. Like, mm-hmm. Wear like the shoe, like a comfortable shoe on the airplane or like the walking shoes, and then one pair of sandals and like one pair of like fancy shoes, but not even like you're probably never going to wear those fancy shoes. And in pictures, you never even see your feet.
Right. And this is why I get so exhausted by like social media, where people are on vacation and then they like dressed up and take all these like insane photos. And I'm just like, so you just brought all these clothes for your Instagram?
100%. And then when you realize that that's what you're doing, stop it, because it doesn't matter. And it's so not worth it. It's so not worth it.
No, I mean, shouldn't we just be like living in the moment and enjoying our vacation and not thinking about the photos and Instagrams?
And I'll say like from Savannah when we went,
yeah,
all of our pictures that we took were from really one night.
I know. You're right.
So like we all wore all these different outfits, but you'd only know the one night we went out.
You're so right. Yeah. Like one night we like hardly took photos. And then there's the one night we went out, we took like 50.
Yeah. It's like, did I need two different shoes for those? Like each out? No.
I overpacked.
Way overpacked. And like I brought different dresses for the daytime and the nighttime. Like one dress for the day. Like who is seeing us even?
Well, you didn't wake up till like noon every day.
I know. Whoa. Joe. Yeah, people don't need to know that.
Well, okay, I'll give you you have the time difference.
That's not why.
I mean, the other mom, we woke up at 7, 8 o'clock every morning.
I know. I was so grateful you guys didn't come wake me up. But then I did feel like a degenerate, like stumbling out of my room at like 11:30. I'm like, you guys, how long have you been awake? And you're like, since like 7 o'clock. I'm like, oh.
But yeah, you're right about the vacation and the packing. The one time I packed perfect, I went to Paris for 2 weeks, and I never do this. I actually planned my entire wardrobe for the whole trip, and I only wore black, white, and gray.
Smart.
And I wear a lot of like basics. So I had a few like cool pieces mixed in. And so I was able to recreate new outfits all the time. I was so proud of myself. It was the best I had ever packed on a trip.
No, that's genius. That's genius. I've never regretted not packing enough. I've always regretted packing too much. So
you're right. That's a good tip. And I'm going to think about it the next time I go away, which who knows when the hell that is, but
in the future.
Okay. So my tip is, I think you probably definitely know this. Do you know when you're sitting at a restaurant or at a dinner table, like a fancy dinner table, do you know which side of your place setting is your bread plate and your water glass? Are you able to figure that out?
Okay. I thought you were going to ask me which side the fork is on. And I'm like, yes, left. Which side is the bread plate? No, left.
It is the left. This is the trick, the most simple trick for you to remember. If you look down at your hands and you create the same shape, a D and a B, I don't know if anyone knows sign language. You put your pointer up and you put your three fingers to your thumb and it creates a D and a B if you look at it. So everybody do it. You see how your left hand is a B and your right hand is a D.
Ah, bread and drink.
Bread and drink.
Oh, that's so clever.
Right?
That is so cool. I never know. There's always like that awkward, like, is this my water cup? Is this your
yes.
cup?
Yes.
That is so clever.
I will say at some restaurants, they stuff the table settings like weddings when you have like 16 people at a table that's supposed to fit 10. I can understand how it gets a little confusing, but the amount of times I've been pissed off that somebody took my bread plate and then it just like, it's like a domino effect.
It trickles down to everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, that's my plate. And they're like, no, it's not. And I'm like, you legitimately don't know. Like you have no idea. You're so wrong.
I didn't know. That is, wow. And I didn't know that I didn't know that.
And so you can just like secretly, like casually on your lap, create the D and B if you're like questioning it. Oh, wait, which side is it? Oh, okay. No. Oh,
that's so smart.
The right side is your drink, your water glass, and the left side is your bread plate.
Wow. Thanks, Molly. I love that.
You're welcome. Please share it with people because I am tired of going out to people who don't know the difference.
You're doing everyone, society, a favor right now. Share it with everyone you know.
I am.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Gossip That's Good For You. Please follow us on Instagram at Gossip That's Good For You. We have a Twitter. Share, tell your friends about us. Rate, review, subscribe. Like, we've gotten some good reviews. Appreciate the ones that we've gotten. But, like, if you're listening to this, you got all the way here. Leave a review. You wasted all this time, you know? And if you got this far, you have the time now to go and leave a review on Spotify or Apple.
We hope our gossip this week was as good for you as it was for us. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.